Welcome to Nostalgia Pilots, a Gundam Wing fan cast that just wants to know what you're up to. I'm Hugh.
I'm Jared.
I'm Spence.
And Banks is off calibrating his Zero system this episode.
Yeah, you know.
He forgot the code to start it, which is kind of ironic because it's just Zero. This is
he's just sitting in his garage with like a stack of floppy disks.
Damn it, Hugh.
Sorry. It's a little bit.
You already stole the bit.
You bit stealer. That's it.
We can cut this out. We can say it again.
No, I'm just going to hold it over you forever. It's fine.
That seems fair.
I did feel like this episode, you had mentioned previous to actually hitting record that you felt like this was peak Gundam. And somehow the theme song really hit me this episode. I was like, yes, we are in the golden era.
I like this theme song better than the original, honestly. I can't even remember anything other than just Wild Beat Communication. I really like this one a lot better.
Yeah, my favorite is definitely the one from the movie when we get there. That is a bop. But today we are going to be talking about Gundam Wing Episode 44. Go forth, Gundam Team!
And prosper? Wait,
as the recap points out, they're an annoying Gundam team.
Yeah, annoying and fearful.
Yes.
Sometimes you roll one on your translation table.
Yeah, I like that they kind of had a bit of a clunky translation there, and then decided, you know what, it's fine. We'll just put it in for the recap as well.
Like, I assume they mean fearsome, but
yeah. Yeah, there was a lot going on in this episode, but I have to confess, and especially in that opening Relena-Zex conversation, I felt like they were cutting a lot of the conversational animation budget so that they could get in the fight scenes later. And there was a lot of that still, like, panning across a single still image and then having just a little bit of it move at the end, like having Zex talk briefly but remain perfectly still throughout the rest of Relena's conversation.
Yeah, like where people just sort of drift by and then at the end there's like a little hair flip.
Yeah. Now, so is this the first time that he's hugged her? Like, I was confused. Like, because has she ever known, like, been with Miliardo as her brother in her life?
Given how awkward it was, I think this is the first time Zex has hugged anybody.
She was like 2 when the Sight Kingdom collapsed, I think. Like, she like learned that she was adopted in this series.
Right.
So when she's talking about her like kind brother that she once knew, she's like, I 100% totally remember who you are.
Yeah.
Like, she is pressing her luck there.
Yeah, no, it's it's definitely a consistency thing or lack thereof.
Also in that scene, like, it's not entirely clear that Zex knows who he's talking to until she says, because I'm really in a peacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he like turns around and like going to hug her.
Yeah. That was just creepy overall. I was not okay with it.
There was also and I don't know, it may have just been one of those translation things. It probably wasn't intended to be much, but I did notice. So he's essentially saying he can't let her get involved. She needs to remain. And this is where the difference happens between the actual dub and sub. So the dub says, a kind woman. I need you to remain a kind woman. Whereas the subtitle just says, remain kind. And to me, I don't know. It was kind of a weird.
Well, I mean, I think if they were doing that on purpose to not to just match up with the mouth movements, you know, he might have been drawing a differentiation between her and Dorothy.
It might just be that like the word that he used in Japanese is particularly gendered.
Okay. So they would know that, but it wouldn't necessarily translate into the subtitle or whatever.
Right. Like, we do get the awkward sibling hug, and then Dorothy, like, leans in way close. Like, like she is, like, trying to out-hug him.
Well, Dorothy does a lot of leaning in this episode, actually.
Yeah. Dorothy leans in.
That should have been the episode title.
This may be this episode title.
Oh my god.
But before she can get out of control, we get war by committee with the whole gang joining in.
Yes, so
everybody gets to vote.
They're in the cockpit of the Peace Million on the bridge, like sort of debating whether or not who they're gonna fight and what they're gonna do.
Also, can I just say that I love that the fact that the ship that's carrying the giant war machines is called Peace Million?
Mm-hmm.
I love the irony.
Well, it's got to be, you got to have a big white spaceship for peace.
Oh, yes.
Filled with death robots. I personally like that Duo like raises his hand and is like I want to fight the giant space battleship.
Yeah, well, they're not even sure.
Star thing.
They're not even sure at first if they should be fighting Zex or not. Well, actually, it seems like the teens are all like, oh, yeah, we fight Zex. And Noin is like, what? We're Zex? Oh, okay.
You don't yeah. have a plan, though, kid.
Noin is not on board for fighting Zex.
Well, yeah, because Zex is, like, her ex.
Like, he shot the Earth. Like, he blew up that island with his laser.
But, like...
But is he that bad, though, really?
Yeah.
Have you seen him in the Discord?
Bad boy... He's the bad boyfriend that she can't get over.
Yeah. We just had a scene where Zex was just like, Earth is canceled.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like, people can come...
Fine.
People can come to space if they want to, but if they stay on Earth, well it's their own fault.
Yeah. They don't have to leave, but they can't stay there.
That was the funnest, just Twitter-esque argument I've ever heard. Like, to speak of peak Gundam, Zex telling the Earth that they can't appreciate the Earth unless they come to space to see the Earth from above. Like, you're getting into Trey's territory with that speech.
Well, it's like that thing where if you've ever heard like an astronaut talk about looking on Earth from above and how there are no borders and how it makes you understand how precious the Earth is and we need to protect it. Like, Zex has the opposite reaction. He's like, well, this has to go.
Yeah. All the people down there are just making this
Earth is beautiful and it's filled with monsters.
Yep.
And as such, he decides he's going to make the decision for the boys himself, and he attacks the Peace Million.
Yep. He's like, but first, let's get rid of these pesky Gundams.
Yep. So there's a huge fleet, and all the Gundam pilots go out to stop it, and he was like, I've got to do my space laundry.
Yeah, I'm not going for this battle.
I got to do a thing.
I got to do a thing. I have to wash my hair. I have to go and find this old CD.
AOL. He's basically pirating software. He's like, no, guys, I gotta copy Monkey Island. You just hang back.
And so they do one volley, and Zex stops the battle after a certain point. Like, okay, they've had enough. Let's pull back for a minute.
Well, no, they blew up all of the bots that he sent, but he's like, I didn't expect them to win. I just want to exhaust them. Like, yeah, he's doing a battle of attrition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So,
but we did get a clear shot of the Shenlong Gundam's flamethrowers working in the void of space.
That makes perfect sense. I will confess, I am a big fan of the, I don't know, it's not exactly a new design, but the cohesive design of the mobile suits at this point. They've got that sort of Zaku matte green paint going on, and they're not all funky colored and Black Death now.
Yep. And I do like that as he's watching this battle here, or like Howard's like, Hero, what do you have up your sleeve that you don't wear?
You have no sleeves. He has no sleeves. I don't know. I don't know if I missed this in a previous episode. I know that there's been sort of this notion of him communicating with Zero previously, but we get a straight up like R2-D2 moment when he, I can't remember exactly. He's looking at like a screen of the battle or whatever, and then
He's looking for that one floppy disk that says the Zero system.
Oh, right.
And And when he's looking through it, he finds the one, and Zero's eyes glow green.
And there's a grunt sound. There's a sound too. It's like a whirr.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little too R2, but there's a little grunting noise.
I think the noise was more in the dub than the sub.
Oh yeah, okay, maybe that's the case because there.
But we do get the flashlight and the whirr.
And then he says, "I know Zero. We can't possibly beat Zex." Which, okay, that's a lot to communicate.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because he's got to pull his Zero system out, so his system is now less Zero than it previously was. So he's fighting at a disadvantage.
Right. So he goes to Howard as they're recuperating from that first volley and says, "Hey, Howard, can we load up this system on all the different Gundams?"
I think he's specifically just adding it to Zandrock.
Yeah.
I did get that impression that in the end he's going to get him on all of them, but for now we're starting with Catra. That was the impression I got.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Wu Fei was fine.
Kind of.
Wu Fei is the same with or without the system
and came out better than he went in.
Yeah, it was weird that, like, to me, it seemed like, okay, why are we choosing Catra? Well, everybody likes Catra. He's adorable. And that's why. But
I think it was also that he's supposed to be the strategist of the group, right? And we're supposed to see...
Well, he's been calling for planning for the whole time.
Yeah, right.
And everybody's been like, "Oh, that's cute, but we've got a thing."
Catra's kind of the smart one.
Yeah. I don't know where I was going with that, except that I'm glad that they finally listened to him.
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny because when he gets out there, okay, at first, initially, he's resistant to Hiro, essentially comes up to him and says, "Use this when it's time." And he's like, "No way, I can't handle it. I'm going to go space crazy again." And so throughout the battle that then ensues, Catra keeps just yelling, "We need a plan. We need a plan." But he never, like, it's only when he actually finally says anything other than "we need a plan" that everyone's like, "Oh, yeah, that's a great plan." Like, I felt like maybe a failed plan or maybe, you know, like something that didn't hold together very well. But
in the sub, he does say something like, "Wu Fei, hang back for now." He's like, "Nope."
Oh, okay. In the dub,
anything that required hanging back, none of the others were willing to do because they're, "I want to go now."
Yeah. And that is at least true to character. But
speaking of wanting to go now, have we talked about about Dorothy offering Relina a gun?
Oh, we didn't get there yet.
Oh, no, we didn't.
In that moment, that I was like, okay, well, this has been Dorothy's plan all along. This is just her. She's been waiting to turn this pacifist into a murderer. Like, that's all she's wanted from this. I don't believe she has any designs on political power at this point. She's just running an extreme psychological Hannibal Lecter game where she's like, "I'm going to take the most unlikely person to turn them into a murderer."
Yeah, you know.
Like one does.
I don't think Dorothy is terribly concerned about winning or losing as long as the most war possible happens.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I actually did kind of get the sense that she's like, "Yeah, I'm going to let this loser get killed and then my cousin Trace can come in and be awesome."
Well, she's got so much going on this episode because we didn't even mention the fact that she's basically driving the mobile dolls this episode.
Which, yes.
You know, at that point, maybe that's actually a good idea. Maybe you guys want to consider the idea that you don't need to put yourself directly in harm's way if you can still also control the dolls. And I did like that scene where Dorothy and Catra managed to sort of realize via tactics. They're like, "Oh, it's Dorothy. Oh, it's Catra." And they managed to figure out who's on the other end of the controlling.
Because Dorothy is in this little room full of screens in this like giant helmet that covers her eyes that looks like Cerebro, which I call Z-Rebro. And like she's got them all in this like unbeatable formation, which really just looks like they're in lines in the dubs. I'm like, is that really that effective?
Yeah, is that great a strategy? And well, her master plan is, well, they're all separated, so what we'll do is we'll kill them individually.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess so.
But basically the thing is that the mobile dolls now can change their tactics on the fly, which they couldn't before.
Right.
And it has to be Zero System because everything has Zero System in it.
Well, not only does everything have zero system in it, the code to start zero system is that you have to type in zero, which was
the letters.
Well, I mean, it's good that Hiro has like learned consent rather than like put him in the zeros, put him in my mobile suit, and we'll see if it makes him less crazy.
Yeah, true, fair. That's fair. I'm just. Is it a security system? Because that's definitely not going to keep your kids out. That's the first password they're going to try.
The password is password.
One, with 2, 3, 4. One. The same as my luggage.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So while that's going on, and Catra manages to punch in zero. He accepts that he may run the risk of space madness, and he manages to sort of stand toe-to-toe with Dorothy and her strategies. While Hiro and Zex are having a little one-on-one Trey's Cucinata-approved space dueling.
Yep, so like they like pass each other in their like non-giant robot forms, and then they come back around, and like they... Like the screen pauses and it goes weird colors and it makes that Gundam sound effect look the bring. It's pretty great. And then we get like them like saber lock, and then there's like a zoom in of their saber lock in the same frame. It's great.
Yeah. The combat sequences in this episode are pretty fantastic.
Yeah. It's a culmination of the different like things that we like about Gundam fights all smushed into this sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cool and stylized.
Yeah. So actually, while we're talking about the broader fight, just clarify for me. It is Sandrock with the like Mach 10 and the shield, right?
Yeah.
That... I'm sure that he's used it previously and I just somehow didn't notice.
Well, that, but
the fact that he's basically just got a space Mach 10 is the funniest
thing. His Mach 10 is like part of his upgrade.
Right.
Like he has a gun now.
They put a gun on it. Yeah.
Because he used to have 40 dudes with guns standing in front of him.
Yeah, I don't understand the effect of a submachine gun in space, a giant submachine gun in space, but it's pretty fantastic. And offset by the medieval shield.
The thing I like about this episode is that, like, Dorothy and Catra see each other across the battlefield, but it's not like Dorothy loses to the Zero System. It's like she's just like, oh, well, there's someone as good as me out there. We should just fire a giant laser cannon.
Yeah, she kind of throws a fit. Like, why is he countering all my moves? Ah! Shoot him!
Yeah, and well, they both culminate in a, like, desperate, like, this is the only thing they can do. This is exactly what's going to happen right now.
We're stalemated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we need to use our ace in the hole.
Yep.
Now, I can't believe I didn't, and we may have actually discussed this on a previous episode, and it has slipped my mind, but this episode especially, the interpretation, and I guess this would have been definitely, you know, perhaps in the zeitgeist in the 90s, would be... And it's such a direct interpretation, I can't believe it never came to me. But the idea that long-term pilots would be using chems, right? Like, we were kind of in that, you know, all pilots are using speed, or long-term, long-flight pilots are using speed at this point, and it's getting into sort of the public consciousness. And I wonder if there is a little bit of that being translated out on the far end of this as well.
Well, I think it is and that it isn't, because Japan's very much, like, against drug use. Like, it's right. A big deal.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, it really...
Yeah, it's like it is an enhancement.
Yeah. So, Relena and Catra are playing mech chess. Dorothy and Catra are playing mech chess.
Dorothy has... Like, when Relena refuses to, like, take the gun, Dorothy locks her in the closet, basically.
Yeah, which leads to the end little stinger bit for Relena, which, again, is just... She's clearly the most out of touch person in this entire series. She insists that she's the only one who can fix this, but I have no idea. She's literally locked in her room, like, anyhow.
Yeah, it is a little infuriating that supposedly she's supposed to be the one to end all wars, but she's often kept in a curio cabinet like a good little princess.
She's still exactly. like 16.
Yeah.
Wait, and if you read it that way and kind of ignore how the rest of the characters behave, you can kind of imagine it as just this really annoying, persistent 16-year-old. I think we've all kind of had that friend at some point who just mm-hmm. inserts themselves into other people's drama constantly, except for this time it's space war.
Yeah, and she's like, I have the answer. You know, you all just need to listen to me because I have the answer.
And what's the answer? The answer is I'm Relina.
Yeah, exactly.
And you all need to stop fighting.
You guys just need to chill.
The answer is, what if we did peace instead of war? Okay.
Yeah.
It would work a lot better if she were like the Big Lebowski. And just be like, man, the dude abides.
Yeah, if this was her just more suffering through a series of, you know, disastrous events and just kind of shrugging it off and abiding, that would be definitely a different show. So Dorothy fires the laser cannon, which to my mind, another just like peak Dorothy moment in this episode. I think she's just been looking to fire that thing for, you know, the entire run of since they built the ship.
The second she saw Zach's fire, she's like, I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, my turn.
And meanwhile, Keynes is on the bridge like in that same pose that he's been in all episode, where he's got like his hand on his hip and one leg forward. Mm-hmm. And he's like, we can't fire that while we're moving. A bad thing will happen. And okay. She's like, I don't care. Do it anyway.
So can we go back to him real quick? One of the things that he said in the beginning of the episode to Zex stood out for me. He said, we wouldn't have chosen, if you didn't care about something, we wouldn't have chosen you as White Fang's leader.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I was a little confused as to how they showed that, because I didn't see it.
In the dub, he spends mm-hmm. a lot of time being like, I won't stop you if we go back to Earth, but I will do whatever I can for you in space if you want to stay. I'll set you up in a colony. I want you to... Like, he wants to protect Relina.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he means when Zex is like, you think I'm weak for trying to protect her.
Okay.
And Keynes like, no, that if you weren't the person that would like have protected your sister, we wouldn't want you to have been the leader.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that.
But yeah, like she fires the cannon.
Now they on the flip side, okay, so she's making a sacrifice of her firing the main cannon because they can't stop. They're not stopping the ship, and they don't know what's going to happen. On the flip side, Peace Million is trying to turn out of the cannon's beam range, and to do so, Sally Poe also has to make sort of a similar decision in which she has to, which there's a lot of symmetry going on in this episode, but anyway, basically she has to sacrifice some of the engines on the Peace Million to be able to make the turn that quickly, and they just get a wing singed.
And basically what's happening in this scene is that they still have 5 episodes left. The ships can't, like, get to each other right away. So mm-hmm. they need to have something happen so that they can spend 4 episodes repairing.
So Goku can train on... No. Anyway. Yeah,
pretty much. Like, oh, we gotta fix the engines so that we can make our final assault.
Well,
because Trace doesn't have his people in space yet.
That's so underlined as well by the way the Zex hero fight ends, because they're going at it, and then all of a sudden Zex is like, oh crap, Dorothy, clearly, you know, I left the oven on, I gotta run back to the ship. And he just leaves, like, that's the end of the fight.
No, nope, like, sorry, oh, right, I left Dorothy in charge, that's probably a mistake.
Yeah.
And then we get to close on Relina's stinger of, I must stop this meaningless battle, like Relina's had any effect on any episode. Relina looking out the
window sadly.
Yeah.
I see, you see it sadly. I see it as cold resolve.
Okay, I can see that.
I'm wondering if she's going to do whatever has to be done, that being some kind of violence. And then yeah. Dorothy wins.
Well, she definitely isn't going to do a violence, because she's like, yeah, I can't get peace through assassination. That's not how peace works. And that I thought that was a really good line, because that goes right back to the assassination of Hiroyui that started the whole thing.
Right.
Like, this whole situation started because Oz assassinated a dude in space.
Gotcha. They haven't used Hiroyui in a while in the show. Because that's Hiro's full name, as well as that historical figure.
It's Hiro's code name, because we haven't seen the scientists in a while.
Are you hinting at something, sir?
Just saying that, you know, the scientists wandered off.
Now, while we're talking the sort of conspiratorial end of this thing, I got to admit, okay, so there's this really sad French movie that, as a Canadian child, I was forced to watch in grade school every year. And it's basically essentially about this town that has a giant snow fort war. Have either of you ever encountered this French gem?
I have not.
Okay, so basically,
I've seen like Red and Le Boom.
Okay, so basically, it's one of those sort of homey 80s films about children having misadventures and, you know, blah, 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 snowball, snow, winter war, etc. Gets incredibly heated in this town. And then the beloved mascot of this one child, but beloved by all in the town, ends up basically crushed in the collapse of a snow fort. And this the death of the dog is sort of the, it's the French Old Yeller, okay? Like, everyone's in tears in French class at this point. But the point is, the death of the dog is what brings the town back together and creates peace. And at this point, without spoiling it, I feel like Relena is that dog. Like, how does Relena have any effect on any of this space war at this point? The only thing that she could do that would be effective, to my mind, and I don't want to, like, downplay her role, but I feel like the only thing that's going to cause space peace is her space assassination.
Well, if she could use that as a sort of, you know, if this is the only way to get people to come together because everybody's trying to protect me, I could possibly take myself out or threaten to as a ransom in order to get people to sit down.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I don't know how we would loop back to it, but I also feel like there is still Hiro's "I will kill you" left on the table from the first act. Now, I don't know how he would get around to murdering Relena at this point. It would seem a little bit cold.
He would smother her with love.
Well, I think that when he like was looking at her through the barrel of the gun on the top of that stage when she was Queen of the Earth.
Right.
I think that was him deciding not to kill her.
Yeah, fair. That's fair.
Like, I think if he went back now, that wouldn't be in character, because Hiro has made a decision that Relena can live.
No prediction. I'm not even going to say it's a solid, like, as a prediction. I'm just saying that if she were to die, that might give Zex pause. That would certainly give Hiro and the Gundam pilots pause. And then on Earth, I don't know what her status as ex-queen is, but I could see them spinning it as, you know, the Room of Fellers coming in line. Anyway, we'll see what happens over the next few episodes. We're very close to the end at this point.
We are.
Dun, dun, dun.
So if we have nothing else to say on this episode, Jared, what was your favorite part?
So we didn't mention it at all, but my favorite part was actually seeing Noin driving a suit. It's not a named suit. It's not a fancy Gundam, but just having her out in space, you know, riding herd on the...
She's still in her Sank Kingdom Taurus.
Right.
She's still got that white Taurus that she's driving around. And she actually, like, hip checks. Like, she saves
Catcher
at one point by, like, hip checking a suit and then, like, driving her... I guess she also has a gun and she shoots through it.
Right.
Well, this isn't the first time that we've seen her in the suit in recent episodes. Like, true. We've seen her fighting a couple episodes past.
But I do like seeing her in suit with all five of the other, well, four of the five at least, and sort of holding her own. Because to my mind, it's a little bit more badass to be the one who isn't in the invincible robot who's still managing to hold her own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I think my favorite part is Dorothy's manipulation of Relena and saying, "What are you gonna do now, Miss Relena?" You know, really starting to let her true intentions show to the audience while still keeping Dorothy mostly in the dark. I thought that was the most genuine part of this whole episode, because everything else seems so lackluster.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, like, Rolina doesn't have a lot of power, but when she, like, does that look at Dorothy and is like, and she does the same look at Zax and she's like, I'm Rolina Peacecraft. I'm not going to shoot someone because assassinations are not useful. Like, I think she started to actually earn that look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will say that the show does go out of its way to underline the idea that the one option she is given repeatedly is to enact violence, and that she always backs down and says, no, I'm not going to take the violent route, even if it does seem like the most sensical route in some way.
My favorite part of this episode is definitely Dorothy and Catra's duel that ends with like two really tight shots of their eyes against a starfield with them saying each other's name,
mm-hmm.
which is so Gundam, and I love it.
And I think that's it, right?
Yeah, and that pretty much wraps this episode.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll do the whole thing where we talk about where people can find us. Yes. So you can find me at resonantmoon.com, and you can find me also at gameschool.tsrpn.com.
You can find all my stuff at hughjodonnell.com.
And you can find my nonsense over at skinner.fm.
You can find us at nostalgiapilots.com and at nostalgiapilots on Twitter.
Is that everything?
I think that wraps up for the day. And
it's so quiet this episode. I don't like it.
It is weird to not have Banks here.
Banks, get back here.
Yes, and you can follow Banks at talknerdytome.com or talknerdytomepodcast.com. That is the number 2. So until next time, I must put an end to this meaningless battle.
By firing a big weapon?
Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.